Om namo bhagavate vasudevaya.
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 Tam
me
nire. Sanuvratam Raha Apramana Vido Artur Ishvaram Matayo Yata Tammenire Balamudha
Tammenire Balamudha
Srainam Chanuvratam Raha Pramana vidho bhartur Ishwaram matayo yata
Ishwaram matayo yata.
Tam
unto Lord Shri Krishna.
Menire took it for granted. Avala delicate. Mudha, because of simplicity. Srainam, one who is dominated by his wife. Cha, also. Anuvratam,
follower.
Raha,
lonely place.
Abramana,
Vidha,
unaware of the extent of glories. Bhartur,
of their husband.
Ishvaram,
the supreme controller.
Mataya,
thesis.
Yata,
as it is.
Translation. The simple and delicate women truly thought that Lord Shri Krishna, their beloved husband, followed them and was dominated by them. They were unaware of the extent of the glories of their husband, as the atheists are unaware of him as the supreme controller. Purport. Even the transcendental wise of Lord Shri Krishna did not know completely the unfathomable glories of the Lord. This ignorance is not mundane, because there is some action of the internal potency of the Lord in the exchange of feelings between him and his eternal associates. The Lord exchanges transcendental relations in five ways, as proprietor, master, friend, son, and lover. And in each of these pastimes, he plays fully by the potency of Yoga Maya, the internal potency. He plays exactly like an equal friend with the cowherd boys, or even with friends like Arjuna. He plays exactly like a son in the presence of Jashoda Maya. He plays exactly like a lover in the presence of the cowherd damsels. And he plays exactly like a husband in the presence of the queens of Dwaraka. Such devotees of the Lord never think of the Lord as supreme, but think of him exactly as a common friend, a pet son, or lover or husband, very much dear to heart and soul. That is the relation between the Lord and his transcendental devotees, who act as his associates in the spiritual sky, where there are innumerable Vaikuntha planets. When the Lord descends, he does so along with his entourage to display a complete picture of the transcendental world, where pure love and devotion for the Lord prevail without any mundane tinge of lording it over the creation of the Lord. Such devotees of the Lord are all liberated souls, perfect representations of the marginal or internal potency, in complete negation of the influence of the external potency. The wives of Lord Krishna were made to forget the immeasurable glories of the Lord by the internal potency, so that they may not be any flaw of exchange. And they took it for granted that the Lord was a henpecked husband, always following them in lonely places. In other words, even the personal associates of the Lord do not know him perfectly well, So what do the theists, writers, or mental speculators know about the transcendental glories of the Lord? The mental speculators present different theses as to his becoming the causes of the creation, the ingredients of the creation, or the material and efficient cause of the creation. But all this is but partial knowledge about the Lord. Factually, they are as ignorant as the common man. The Lord can be known by the mercy of the Lord only, and by no other means. But since the dealings of the Lord with his wives are based on pure transcendental love and devotion, the wives are all on the transcendental plane, without material contamination. Thus ends the Bhaktivedanta purports for the first canto, 11th chapter of the Srimad Bhagavatam, entitled Lord Krishna's Entrance into Dwaraka. So here the principle is knowing the unfathomable glories of the Lord. So these are not able to be known. There's an idea that we know something about Krishna, and we've, you know, learned something, we've heard some philosophy, okay, we know, we've heard we're not this body, or we've heard some other elements like this. And, you know, we know many things about Krishna, that he's great and that, or we may even know beyond, we may know all about his different pastimes, and oh, we can say, okay, at this time of the day, then yes, now he is, you know, taking his breakfast and getting ready and for going out with the cowherd boys, and, you know, he'll sneak off, and when he takes 72 steps, or it's 100 steps to where he rests. And the Ayurveda mentions a certain number of steps that one should take after eating for digestion. So Krishna's bed is exactly put in that place so that when he walks that many steps, and then he takes his nap. So we may know all these things. We may know more detail. We know so many things, his peacock feathers like this, he wears his turban like that, he wears so many pieces of cloth, and, you know, so many parts of his body like this and that. So this is all good. But the point being made here is still you can't know the Lord. That's the idea, is when you know, then you have control. And if you have control, you enjoy. So knowledge is an opulence, knowledge is a power. So there's always this interest to know, because if I know, then I can speak. Right? If I haven't seen the person, I can't really make any comment. But if I find out something about them or see them, then I can start making comments. You know, then I can establish my superiority. So then we always have to be careful that in gaining this knowledge about Krishna, it's not for the purpose of establishing our own superiority, that we are something special, something very great. But that Krishna is beyond that. Because that's not what's great about Krishna, right? By definition, God is the source of everything, right? He's the original person before everything, the cause of everything, the creator of everything. So that's God, that's his job description, right? So that's not what's special about God, right? That's just what he does. What's special is his interaction with his devotees. That's what's special. So like in this verse, then, is bringing out as a conclusion here how Krishna, because of the affection of the queens, then he comes under their, control, seemingly under their control. So they know this much, and so then they understand that. So they become the instrument for the Lord's tasting rasa. Right? That's the point here, is that the queens, through their affections and dealings, they become the instrument by which Krishna then interacts with his devotees and tastes rasa. So he's Rasaraj. This is what's important here, is that it's through the devotees that this happens, because he himself is self-satisfied. He doesn't need anybody to inspire him. Right? He's the original person. Everything is there. So he inspires himself. Right? He's the perfect introvert. Right? He can fully inspire himself by being alone. There's no problem. He doesn't need someone else to inspire. But if there he reciprocates. He expands that. Right? So that's the thing, is he's perfect. This idea is there are those who, unless they're alone, they can't be inspired. And when they're with others, then it's okay, but it's not their inspiration. Others, only when they're with others, that inspires them, and they don't like to be alone. But Krishna, he's satisfied when he's alone, he's satisfied when he's with the devotees. So here, that satisfaction of interacting with the devotees, then these queens, in this instance, are that instrument. Then he behaves in this way. So this is the thing, it's only for reciprocation. Right? This is the point. That's why they're called pastimes. That's the thing, is Krishna takes the taste of the interaction as serious. Right? And it's a drama. We always see it's pastimes. He was doing this just like a dramatic actor. Or he was, you know, it's constantly used, those various analogies and metaphors of him being an actor and it being a drama. But in the material world, we're too, important for such things, right? We take ourselves very seriously, and whatever we do, very seriously. Right? So therefore, it's not a pastime. This is quote-unquote, reality. Right? But Krishna is performing his pastimes under yoga mile. And that's actual reality. We're performing under mahamaya. It's not exactly what you call reality. But of course, those within it always consider that this is real. So then they're controlled by it. But for Krishna, he's not controlled by it. It's the natural way of interaction. Right? The queens, they act in their various feminine ways, and Krishna reciprocates that. He sits with them in lonely places, he'll smile. He will appear as if he's under their control, though he is the supreme independent. So this is the method, this is rasa. So we see is, for Krishna, this is the ultimate rasa, what we're trying to get to. Is the mundane rasa, one sees it doesn't have anything. Right? But you can only understand there's nothing there if you know what it is. Right? Let's say I've never tasted a particular fruit, let's say a kumquat. Right? So I cannot say if it's good or bad. You know, I can make all kinds of speculations, but unless I know what it is, I can't say what it is. Right? So, by tasting, then you can understand it's nice, it's not nice. So the whole idea is that therefore, real taste of anything, spiritual, material, comes under Krishna's direction. How Krishna says to deal with something, that is how you're actually going to get the taste. Then by dealing with it, according to that direction, then you can understand, yes, this has spiritual taste. I go to the temple, I behave in the right way, I interact with the devotees properly, I chant the holy name properly, I worship the deity, I hear the script, and then I see, yes, this has taste, and this is spiritual. Or I interact with the devotees and everyone else according to social custom and everything like that, in the proper way. And then I see is it gives an experience, but it doesn't actually have any taste. Does that make sense? Then one can see is that the real taste is in the spiritual world. That's where the real taste is. And in that, Krishna also is taking. For Krishna, it's not the smiling glances and the soberness and the shyness and the excitement of the feminine interaction. It's simply that they are making the endeavor to try to please Krishna in that way that he tastes. And since they're endeavoring in that way, he reciprocates in that way. Does that make sense? Otherwise, if they're acting as very gentle and submissive and shy girls, then he comes in and whacks them on the back and say, hey, let's wrestle and let's go out and play with the frogs. And it's kind of like, you know, isn't that for the cowherd boys? You know, yeah. Okay, nice, okay. Yeah. You know, so that, it doesn't work that way. So because they present it in that way, through that medium he reciprocates. Right? But that doesn't mean that the activity in itself is what's important. This is where the term pastime has its meaning. Pastime means that that's not, the activity is not what's important, it's the interaction with the devotee that's important. That rasa, tasting that endeavor by them to please him. Right? So, in the beginning, then for us, form becomes important. Right? We see the form, we get involved in the form of an activity, of an interaction, of anything. But it's actually not the form of it. It's the proper mood in which it's done. It's the attitude. There's something behind it that makes it work. That's what's important. And if you look at it, no one's fighting over tasting the proper mood and interaction, right? Fighting's always over the form, right, of an activity. Does that make sense? Because the principle is the same, right? So many people have so many different ideas of how a relationship works. How does a conjugal relationship work or a parental relationship? And they have all their theories. But the principle that it works on is always the same. So they fight over the form of it, not actually how it works. Because actually how it works may or may not be known. If it's known, there's no fight. If it's not known, then there's fight. Does that make any sense?
Huh?
Between?
I don't understand between the five. Between who?
Okay, let us say you have one person who has a theory and they write books on child raising, right? Like you have Dr. Spock or something. And then you have someone else who comes along and they have a different theory. Right? And so they'll sit down and argue over the points of how you're supposed to raise the child. Does that make some sense? But the principles of what is a child, what is a parent, and what is interaction, that's eternal principles. So that actually if one understands that, that's what actually makes it work. It's not the form. Right? Like you take the, what do you call it? Not Samaritans, Sumerians. So, what is it? Very tough. Huh? Spartans. Okay, Spartans. The child is born, and the first thing they do is take the child over to the creek. Right? And then they take the child and put it under the water, completely under the water in the creek. Right? It's cold water, and you know, they're completely submerged and they leave him there for a specific amount of time. The child drowns, then, you know, problem solved. If the child lives, then he's accepted as a, you know, a valuable member of the community. Right? Because for the, what were they called? Spartans, their thing was fighting. So they only wanted the toughest people. They didn't want any wimps. So if the kid was a wimp, they weren't interested. Right? So one could take this, and they were a very powerful community. Right? You hear about them. Like this. And even though there were a small amount of them, they were very strong. I think they finally got wiped out by the
Persians.
The Persians, right? 1 million Persians against 300 Spartans. But it took 1 million Persians to wipe them out. They did get wiped out. but it took 1 million of them. So that was a value to them. So for them, this is a very important aspect of child raising. Right? You go to another community, that may not be considered, you know, an important detail. Right? But now, what is the point? The point is that the child is accepted by the parents, by the community, as a member of that community. Right? By that acceptance, then there is felt to be a need, there's an identity, right? There's a value system. Then the child can develop that and grow into that and imbibe that. Right? So this is the detail that they took as, we will accept such a child into our community. Right? Another community is something else. The child has good character, or they're intelligent, or they're properly behaved, or, you know, just that they happen to be their child, or it doesn't, you know, there's some method. Does that make sense? But the main principle of being accepted by the parent, by that community, that's common. Does that make sense? So then you could have, you know, one parent saying, you know, you took your baby out there and, you know, the baby drowned, you know, like that. You're not a good parent. And they're saying, no, who would want to be a parent of such a kid who drowned? You know? Does that make some sense? So it's
that's the form.
Huh? That's the form. So that form, there may be differences of opinion on. But the principle, there'll never be. So that's the whole idea, is the principle is what is important. So for Krishna, the principle is what's important. Of course, then there is a form that he sets that he prefers. Even within that, there are superior and inferior forms of social interaction. So Krishna prefers certain social forms. But the social form isn't what is important. What's important is the mood in which it's done. Right? So because the queens, they act in a way that is according to the tradition, that's nice. But what's important is that they're acting in that way to please him. So the desire to please him is actually the essence. That's the real principle. Does that make any sense? So here then the Krishna comes and reveals all these things so we can actually get an idea of what we're actually looking for is something beyond what we generally think it is. Because we generally get caught up in the form, right? That form is Maya here. But we have to transfer it to the actual, it's devotion. That's the real essence. And if that's there, then naturally then the spiritual form will manifest. Right? Means from the proper internal form, then manifests the proper external form. And in the spiritual platform, there's no difference. Mother Yashoda has the motherly affection for Krishna. Therefore, she manifests the motherly form. The cowherd boys have that kind of relationship with Krishna. That's their mood. So they develop the form of cowherd boy. So same here in the material world. If our purpose is to please Krishna and make him happy, then automatically we develop the spiritual form. So that's the thing, is one has to see beyond. The material world is also a pastime. Right? But it's not, it's an inferior pastime. So we see that we do whatever we do here to please Krishna. We're trying to make him happy. And that endeavor is what's good. You know, okay, we manage nicely, or we develop nicely the economics, or we do art nicely, or we study and teach nicely, or whatever we're doing, that's good, because we're trying to do our best because we want to please Krishna. But it's pleasing Krishna that's actually important. If we don't please Krishna, then it doesn't actually have any meaning. Though externally it may look good, one could say, yes, I've done everything perfectly. Right? That's a very common mistake. We look back, I did everything right. But it was wrong, because it didn't work. So we get so caught up in the form that we miss the point. That doesn't mean the form is not seen. That's what Prabhupada called the hippie mentality. It doesn't matter. Right? But it's that it's... How do you say? That one's trying to please Krishna, therefore the form is performed as best as possible. And as close as possible to the form that Krishna appreciates. Then, if what that mood is there, then Krishna is pleased, then we'll be happy, and everyone else will be happy. Does this make any sense? So we're trying to get through to that the mood is right. The attitude of devotion to Krishna, pleasing the devotees, that's what we're trying to get to. And then the form may be ideal, may not be ideal, depending upon time, place, and circumstance. So if we can get that right, Krishna is pleased, because that's what Krishna reciprocates with. Right? He's reciprocating with your mood to please him. And then he'll reciprocate through the form that you approach him in. Does that make sense? The only reason Krishna is reciprocating with the queens is because of their devotion to him. And because they've approached him as wives, he reciprocates as a husband. But the only reason, it's not because they approach him as wives that he reciprocates as a husband. No, it's only because they approach him with devotion. Then he reciprocates the method that they approached him through. Right? That's your sarvadharmam parityaja. Right? Means that's what's there. It's not that the religion is what's important. No, it's pleasing Krishna is important. Then what aspect of religion you use to please Krishna, that Krishna reciprocates with. Right? In the beginning, yeah, does that make sense? Okay, is there any questions on this? Okay, yes.
My question is, when you satisfy the Guru Maharaj and the devotees, I think it's okay. You satisfy Krishna?
If you satisfy your Guru and the Vaishnava, you satisfy Krishna. Basically, you could say yes. Because Guru is trying to please Krishna, the Vaishnavas are trying to please Krishna. So if they're pleased, then that means then you please Krishna.
Because for me, sometimes I don't know how I can satisfy Krishna. No? I don't know what he wants, I make. No? I don't know. Sometimes, yeah. Perhaps I must make this service. It's okay to Krishna, but Krishna perhaps...
Ramanuja's disciple? Kuresh. Yeah, so Ramanuja was standing in front of Rangaji facing the deity and, you know, taking darshan. Because there it's a very small door. And standing next to the door, next to the door on the side, Kuresh was facing Ramanuja with his hands and like this. So Ramanuja, you know, kind of noticed and said, the deity's over there. You know, you got your back to the deity. Kuresh says, he's your deity. You know him. I don't know him. I know you. So if I serve you, you're serving him that way that I'm serving him. But, of course, that's an extreme example. But that's the pastime. Because they know the Lord. So the Vaishnavs, the Guru Vaishnavs, they know the Lord. So we know them. So we assist them. And then they engage us. They're engaged in the Lord's service. We engage in their service. We're engaged in the Lord's service. So then it works. Like that.
Yes.
Is there a hierarchy of religions?
Yes.
And is that based on the reciprocation that you get from performing that?
Oh, is the reciprocation on the hierarchy of religions, is that what establishes? Basically, it's just like, except for Varnashram Dharma, all religions of the world, every last one, is based on fear. Fear of God. So, you know, it's like this said, he's a God-fearing man, you know, like this. So fear is the thing. So the everybody, even those within Varnashram, it's fear that makes it work. So the problem is that's a lower principle. It's nice, it creates discipline, there's social, you know, proper interaction, and people do things how they should do. But because it's based on fear, fear means we don't actually know our relationship with God. Because the mood's not that of servant, it's just fear. If I do this, God will be pleased. If I don't do this, then, you know, a thunderbolt may come and, you know, zot, and then, you know, the pile of ash, or the earth will open up and I'll fall inside. And, you know, there's all those typical scenarios of what we expect to happen. Like that. So that's all lower. So technically only Varnashram is considered actual mundane religion. Everything else is technically not on the same platform. It's all on the next platform down, which is that of extended sense gratification. Because you see, is they're all based on moral, be good, be nice, turn the other cheek, you know, all these different kinds of things. So all it is you're trying to, if I'm nice, then they'll be nice. And so then you try to create the niceness. So niceness is just extended sense gratification. It's not technically, actually, religion. It's secondary religion. It's called upadharma. Morality, you know, niti, these things are secondary. They're necessary in the performance of actual religion, but they're not themselves complete. Does that make some sense? So Varnashram then is the form through which the actual religion can be established. But real religion actually is devotion to God. Right? So then the Varnashram becomes a better form through which to express one's devotion to God than other religions. Right? Your contemporary religions. Your non-Vedic. Right? But more focused than that is Pancharatra as a religion. Because it cuts out anything that's not connected with the deity. Everything you do is basically connected to the deity or just connected. Like you take your bath because you want to be clean to serve the deity. You know, it's not as direct as offering something to the Lord. But it's just secondary. Right? But it's not that you're being clean because if you're clean, then, you know, your wife won't be disturbed. You know. Like that. And if your wife is pleased, then your mind will be peaceful and therefore then you can sit down and do the deity worship. So that's farther removed. So then Pancharatra as a religion is more focused. And then the Bhagavat is completely focused because it doesn't deal at all with conditioned nature. So it's the perfect religion. Does that make sense? So that way then there's a hierarchy of religion.
What would be the meaning or requirement? So if we by knowing Krishna and knowing the details of the philosophy, we don't know Krishna. What would be the meaning or requirement to develop devotion? minimum requirement of knowledge to develop
devotion. What is the minimum requirement of knowledge to develop devotion? We can't know everything. Basically, what Krishna Prabhupada gave in the very beginning was these three aspects, Sabandha, Abhideya, and Prayojana. One is that we're not this body, we're servant to Krishna. Right? And two is an Abhideya, then is that service to Krishna is our natural occupation. And the third in Prayojana is that love of God, Krishna's happiness, you know, is the goal of our life. So if we take the material energy and engage it in the Lord's service for His pleasure, feeling ourselves to be His servant, that's the essence of everything. All other philosophy expands from these three points. We're servant of Krishna, devotion to Krishna is our occupation, and love of Krishna or pleasing Krishna is our goal. Everything else fits into these three categories. Every aspect of philosophy or culture. So if one knows that, one will be successful. Right? Because if one, the principle, if the detail is, I mean, the detail may not be known, but if you're trying to please Krishna, then you'll try to work out what's best. You'll ask, you'll inquire, Krishna will reveal. Because that's also mentioned, is that Krishna reveals. He descends. The whole process is transcendental, is beyond the material. We're within the material. Therefore, Krishna has to descend. That's adhokshaja. The transcendental platform is aprakrita. It means it's beyond the material. But Krishna descends into it as adhokshaja. So that platform of gaining knowledge means it comes from the Lord. It comes, He descends into it, He empowers it. Like that. Then we can, so that is on the platform of detachment, but then within, so the intelligence can appreciate like that, but then it has to come down to the mind. So the mind has to experience it. Right? So that's, what's that? That's aparoksha. So from that platform, then we appreciate, it's just like you go, there's a nice kirtan, right? One's dancing in ecstasy and all that. But actually, you're only kind of aware of the experience of happiness. Right? It's unspoken. It's there. You know it's there. But you can't really focus on it. Because as soon as you do, it's not there. Right? As soon as you stop and think, yes, I'm in ecstasy, then it's gone. So that's the thing, is that there's a form. That's why that's the platform of Varanashram. You have to have a form in which you will taste the experience. Right? If we say that, okay, when we meet, then we go Hari Bol, and please accept my humble obeisances, and maybe give an embrace, and then like that, that's a form. In that, we will taste the happiness of interacting. But if we focus on that taste of interacting, it disappears, because it has to have a form. That's why you have the Varanashram system, is simply to create a form in which you can taste. Because aparoksha, you're aware it exists, but you can't grasp it. You know? Now the typical example I think is given in the Upanishads is that of sleeping. Right? You're asleep. So you're not aware, but when you wake up in the morning, you can say it was a nice sleep or it was a bad sleep. Right? But if you were fully aware, yes, this is a good sleep, you'd be awake. Right? Does that make sense? So it's a very subtle point, is that what we're looking for is actually not, it's only, we can tell it's there. But you can't, so that's the top of the mundane. So Krishna, through the adhokshaja, will descend into and empower that aparoksha platform. So if one's performing one's activities and duties in connection with Krishna, then that experience then will also be in connection with Krishna. So you get a double experience. The one of the material element of interaction that one may be looking for. You know, that personal interaction. The same time as the spiritual experience is there. Right? So then with time, by performing that dual path, the dual aspect, you start to see that it's the spiritual that is actual satisfaction. And then the material, even though it's nice, it's pleasant, but there's no substance, there's nothing there. So then one is able to leave it. So one performs the duties, but it's not important. Does that make sense? I think we should probably, we'll end here, and then we'll continue with questions for whoever would like to continue. Okay. Rantaraj Srimad Bhagavatam, Srila Prabhupada ki, Sarvagata Bhaktivedanta ki, Charanita Gaurav. So the question is, highball, if we can look wide there. The question is that if we're doing things because of fear, so then that may have the flavor that then we're fearful of surrendering to authority also, since fear is there, an element. So will that fear of surrendering to the authority affect our Krishna consciousness and our spiritual development? So in coming from the platform of fear, then yes, it will. Because fear, its actual basis is fear of our relationship with Krishna. That's actually what fear is. Because we don't want to acknowledge that I am servant of Krishna. Because then we're dependent upon Him. We have to surrender to Him. And we have to trust Him. We have to give our life to Him. And then we have to deal with what He gives us. And because of lack of that faith, then we want to be in control of what we'll get. This is the idea of I'm in control, then I will get what I want and I will enjoy what I want. But so here it means we're actually giving up control. So by surrendering, becoming a servant, we're giving up that control. But because it has been a conscious decision on our own part, one's not out of control. One hasn't lost control. But that control may take a different form. Like we see here, the queen. Krishna is actually in control. But because of the relationship, it appears that the devotee is in control. Because for Krishna, that's very nice. Right? That's why these elements are there. They're a matter of reciprocation. Like here, if the husband, you know, behaves as if he's henpecked, then there's the most dynamic interaction between the husband and wife. Because when the wife feels that there's control, then she feels the safety. One is she's gained something, and because there's control, there's safety. It will last. So then naturally she will relax. When she relaxes, then she's at her best. If she's in anxiety, she's at her worst. Right? So then by that principle, then it's there. But the point is that it only really works if the man is like Krishna, who's detached. And it's actually just the interaction that's important. It's not who's in control or not in control. It's that the sincere endeavor to please. Does that make sense? So it appears that one's lost one's control. Right? So does that make sense? For the man, it appears he's lost his control. Like that. Same time as the woman's in control, but she's in control within the field that's set by the man. You know, the wife is submissive, she renders service, she's favorable, all these different elements of chastity. But within that field, she's in control. The field's been created by the man, but the wife is in control of it. Right? If she steps outside of that field, then there's no relationship. So both are controlled. Both have to surrender. Right? So that principle comes from the original is that we want to enjoy. So therefore, then there's the idea that if I control, I will enjoy. Therefore, I become God, and I don't see myself as servant. And because of that, then there's fear. Right? So any other fear is because of that. Like we're afraid, physically afraid, or something, you know. Then that's because of we're going to lose the body, and the body is our method of control. That's how we enjoy through. So we're afraid of losing that. While for the devotee, they have the body, they lose the body. It doesn't matter to them. Because if they lose it, they'll gain the spiritual form. They're always going to be with Krishna, always be serving Krishna. So for them, it doesn't matter. That's why the devotee is fearless. That's why that principle is always mentioned. One should become fearless, because fearlessness then is important. You know, that is important.
So we have to be afraid of Maya.
We're afraid of Maya because that makes us forget Krishna.
But if we fully surrender, then we actually shouldn't have fear of Maya because we know that the protection will be coming from Guru and Krishna.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. So the point is that being made that therefore if we fully surrender, Krishna will protect us, and then we can be assured of that protection. So there's no need of fear. This doesn't mean that in this we don't use intelligence, because there's this idea that there's a sentimental idea of surrender. That surrender means body, mind, and words. So we'll surrender the body. We may even try in some ways to surrender the mind. Sometimes we don't surrender the intelligence. Or we'll surrender the body and not the mind. So we're performing the activities, but we actually haven't really surrendered to it. But that it's not sentimental, means the sentiment may be involved, but one's using one's intelligence, so one is not cheated. Right? You see, Prabhupada in his dealings is always very personal and very perfect in all interaction. But no one could cheat him. Right? So this is the balance. Everything here is always, there's always two things happening at once. If it's not, then it's, you know, it's called a rock or, you know, it's a dead man.
But Krishna ultimately will never cheat us. So if we surrender,
yes.
Yeah.
So Krishna, then Mati makes the point that Krishna will never cheat us, so ultimately it will work. That's but same time as we still have to be, the mind and intelligence have to be in tune with that. Because otherwise Krishna is not cheating. Anything that happens to a devotee, Krishna is in control of and is happening for the devotee's benefit. Right? But because of attachment to the material energy, the devotee may not see that. Because there's the elements of artha, artharthi, jikyasu, of why we surrender. So then for us, then religion means that those will be alleviated. I don't have facility, I will gain facility. I have anxiety, anxiety will go. You know, I don't have knowledge, I will gain knowledge. So much of the time then we see is that we don't want difficulty. So if difficulty comes, then there's got to be something wrong with the religion. Because religion means you perform an activity, you get a result. It's also, it's fruitive. Right? So that's why when you go up, is anything below Varnashram is automatically fruitive. No ifs, no ands, no buts. As soon as you get to Varnashram, it could be fruitive or it could be non-fruitive. When you go up into deity worship, you can use it in a fruitive way, but that's not its purpose. If you do, it's in the mode of passion.
So
You know? But then also, then on that platform, liberation is also fruitive. Right? So only devotion is not fruitive. So that's why then you have to perform your duties with detachment for Krishna. Because detachment's not enough. I'm detached because I know I'll get a better result. Right? It takes some faith to know that. It's just like someone has money, it doesn't seem right that if I give it away, I'll get more. No, I have it, so I keep it. But that's the principle. You have to have faith that if I give in charity, I'll get more back. So the detachment, and it's all, everything's worked into this detachment, always worked into everybody's occupation. And by that, you'll get more. So, yeah, without faith, nothing functions. That's why any interaction can't disturb faith. Anything that disturbs faith is not a properly applied action. So, therefore, it may be in the name of so-called truth or justice, but it's just nonsense. Say what they like, it sounds good. Because nowadays, truth and justice, they're platitudes that are politically correct, so people buy it, that all you have to do is pull those out of the hat, or a little sentiment, and everybody should leave you alone, you'll get success, right? It's a completely fruitive platform. Right? I want success, so therefore I'll come out from these platforms. Right? But the point is this is not the reality. It's not just and it's not truth. If it breaks faith, because faith is what you're trying to get, you can't call it truth. Right? You can't call it justice. Something that breaks faith. You know what I'm saying? Because the point is one's supposed to move forward, because without faith you cannot move forward. But because we're coming from a faithless background, you know, means material consciousness. Therefore, breaking of faith is just kind of like normal. Dogs bark and, you know, mundaners break faith. Because if you break faith, you maintain material existence. So we have faith in material existence, so therefore we break faith in the spiritual, or even something else, and we create that constant. Material means it's always changing. So if I break faith in one thing, it'll change. So therefore, then the mundane is... So Krishna says the living entities are maintaining the universe, right? We think, no, Krishna's maintaining. No, Krishna creates the facilities, but it's only there and runs because the living entities are maintaining it through their desire that it does go on. Because the point is if something breaks down, like I've seen it so many times, I mean, it's kind of like there is that kind of romantic idea that there should be something ideal, but then so many times that's broken because it's material world, devotees will put that onto the spiritual. And I've actually seen, they're actually in one way happy that somebody's fallen down or a project fell apart and, yeah, I knew it couldn't last. And because if it can't last, then that means my mundane consciousness and my inability to maintain spiritual focus and thrust is also okay. Understand? It has a fruitive purpose, having that attitude. Because then I can go ahead and do whatever I want independently. Well, if actually it works, the person was Krishna conscious their whole life and went back to Godhead, and or a marriage worked, or you know they were a good leader their whole life, or you know the project was started off and it developed, and then that means then I have to, then there is the possibility I have to surrender to God. Maybe the Guru Shadow Shastra is right. I have to surrender. Well, if it doesn't work, then see, it doesn't work, so I can be independent. That's the underlying mentality. Right? Like that. So, that's the thing. And because what we do, we take very seriously, therefore it seems very real and important. You know, we don't like anything, it seems like a game. But the point is, it's all a game. So now it's just a matter, is it Krishna's game, or is it our game? That's the choice.
So how
game it will be. It's just whose game. How to check if you really surrender. Well, first would be to see if what one's doing is according to Guru, Sadhu, and Shastra. That's always there. Then see the body, the mind, the words. Those all also connect. So maybe the body's doing, but the mind and words aren't. Or the words are, but the body and mind isn't. You know, like this. So we have to see that all of them are there. But we start someplace, and then from there, even though the others may not be there, that's we don't throw out what's good. That's an important thing. It's ignorance where you throw out. You know what I'm saying? There's two methods. You have white at one end, you have black at the other, and you have various shades of gray in the middle. That's one system. Another system is you have white and then you have black. Right? Can we give an example? Okay. One example is that, okay, maybe there's some flaw in it, but it works. Or there's something I can still gain from it. The other is, if there's a flaw in it, it's useless, it's thrown out. So generally, how you say? You'll find different people are more accommodating, therefore they see the shades of gray. And people who are not accommodating, they see black and white. So Prabhupada could see anything, anywhere. He's going to San Francisco. He's arriving there. He's met by 50 long-haired, dirty West Coast, you know, hashberry hippies, right? So they like chanting. They understand that I'm not this body. By theory, they understand to please Krishna is the goal of life, and that's it. The rest of the time, they're smoking dope, having sex, doing whatever they do. They never take the baths. You know, they're just perfect, typical West Coast dirty hippies. The Prabhupada doesn't go, oh, a bunch of dirty hippies, what can we do? No, he sees that they've caught this aspect of Krishna consciousness. Therefore, then he cultivates. That's why he could do it and his god brothers couldn't.
So we should deal with ourselves like this?
Should we deal with ourselves? Excuse me. Should we deal with ourselves like this? Yes, but it has to be understood how that works. In other words, where there's fault, that has to be removed. What's good, that should be cultivated. But we should never think that the position that we're at now is fine. That's where the weakness comes. If we deal like that with others, then we're generally more kind and outgoing in that. If we deal like that with ourselves, we generally are complacent. Because, so then the point is you have to, there's complacency, and then there's ignorance, or depression. So both are a problem, because both mean no activity. So technically they're both ignorance. Just one's positive ignorance, one's negative ignorance. So the point is one has to see is that whatever is the position, you start there and you know where you're trying to go, so therefore you make a plan to connect the two.
From black to white.
Yeah.
From black to white.
Yeah. And then you move through. Whatever stage they're at, you move through. So the same way with oneself, whatever stage you're at, you move through. It's not that we're okay, others need work. No, we need just as much work. But if you berate yourself for past failures, you won't progress. So it's got to be something's wrong. It's recognize that it's wrong. So either we don't recognize it, no, it's fine, and maintain our ego. Or, I can't do anything like all this, all that, and then you can't do anything either. So the point is, okay, we did that wrong, now how to improve it? What was good about it, keep that. What wasn't good, correct that, and move forward. So that's the mode of goodness. So you're actually dealing with what's happening now. You know, the past, you learn from it, but you don't live in it. In the future, you don't live in ether. You know where you're going, but you don't live there. Right? One could say, no, but Krishna consciousness is the future. No, Krishna consciousness is present. Does that make some sense?
And Vaisadhana Bhakti is described as obligatory. So what's the difference between that and fear?
What's the difference between obligatory and fear? Fear means you have a positive, that fear is negative in that you think that if I don't do this, or if some situation is not there, an activity is not there, or a goal or something is not attainable, that's lost, then there's loss. That didn't quite, it wasn't a complete sentence. Okay. If I don't do this, I will lose. Or, you know, so by doing this, I will gain. Right? That's the principle fear is working on. Obligatory means is that there's, but it's not necessary, you're not looking at the relationship in fear. Because you've separated the relationship. That's what fear means. You've cut yourself off from relationship. But obligatory means you're looking at the relationship. It's an obligation. There is a relationship there, so therefore, in that relationship with the other person, you need to do this. You know, but it's vital. It's not spontaneous. You know, so it works. It establishes relationships. So if you act on duty, you have relationships. If you act on fear, you have no relationships. Right? Because you only do it because you're going to lose something. Right? Means, you know, something's going on, the wife behaves in a certain way, husband gets upset, you know, and that, then out of fear, the wife then starts to be nice, pleasant, do this, do that, all do all the things she should do. Because she's afraid of the loss. But it's not that she's thinking the positive of the relationship and the obligation, she's just thinking of her loss. Otherwise, then, it would just be performance of duties, whether she wants to or not. But because she acts, when she wants, she does it, and when she doesn't want, she doesn't do it. Therefore, then there is the possibility of loss if the husband, you know, somehow or another there's a little bit of detachment where, or there's at least repulsion, then there'll be loss. Then one follows. Rather than, no, this is the duty, so like it or not, it's done. Then the relationship is maintained. You understand? So, does that make sense? So that's why Krishna is always saying, perform your duty. Because then there's a relationship. But otherwise, he's leaving the battle out of fear of loss. It seems very nice that he's going and giving up and compassion and going to the forest, but it's actually fear of loss. Because what he's afraid of losing is the nice family relationship. So if he doesn't fight, goes to the forest, the family remains, he can at least remember about it. Right? You can think back as, yeah, we used to do this, we used to do that. But if he has the battle, all those people are gone. So therefore, out of fear, then he's giving it up. Right? And the symptoms of fear are there, though they manifest as something else. Right? It means there's, basically speaking, there's a few chemicals in the body, and when those dump into the system, you always get the same symptoms, though the mind, depending on the situation, interprets them differently. Right? Adrenaline dumps into the system, you get butterflies. You know, there's disturbance in the shoulders, there's, you know, the feeling of everything repressed or coming out, something is there. So that happens when you walk down a dark alley and something makes a noise. It also happens when the boy touches the girl. But one is considered, oh, this is this. The other is considered that. It's the same exact experience, physical. Does that make sense? So it's just a matter of how it's interpreted. So it's a matter of you perform the duties, then it functions. Relationship is there. You function out of fear, no relationship is there. Even though it seems you're doing the same thing. Oh, I did, but that's only based on justice. Okay, they've done this much. If I really calculate, yeah, the guy did do all these things, and so therefore it deserves 5 minutes of smiling and doing this, so then they do it. But it's still working out of fear. It's not based on relationship. Relationship is this is my duties in this relationship. This is their duties in the relationship. We both do it, then it works. So Arjuna is a warrior. Therefore, it's his duty to fight. And then other warriors on the battlefield, then they will also feel that kshatriya mood, that chivalry, and the relationship will be there. If he leaves, then where's the relationship? It's lost. You know. So that's why it's considered irreligious, because the relationship is lost. You know, you can transform a relationship, but you can't lose a relationship. You know, does that make some sense? Is that okay? Okay.
When you're rendering service to this spiritual master, Krishna, through this institution, a medium, the institution, sometimes you may find yourself under the an authority within that institution that you may not, according to your point of view, according to your vision, be qualified by their past activities or some past ways. How do you deal with that?
How do you deal with working under an authority that doesn't appear to be qualified? The thing to check is how do they engage you? Because there's a few things there. One is their actual ability to perform the service. Right? Two, there's their Krishna consciousness. Three, there's their own personal nature and character. Like that. So what we're looking for is we're looking to be engaged in the Lord's service. So if they're actually engaging us in the Lord's service, even though they may not be great managers or their character may not be bad, they may even be motivated why they're getting you to do it. They're getting you to go out and do big collection, telling you, you know, it's for Krishna and all that, but the main thing for them is that they'll look good amongst the other temple presidents, that their temple collects the most. But the point is that going out and collecting, you're doing it for Krishna, is bona fide, and that as long as they're engaging in bona fide activities, even if their mentality is wrong, their nature is wrong, it doesn't matter. You'll go back to Godhead. They won't. Like that. Maybe by you going back to Godhead, they'll get benefit. You know, they did happen to be the temple president, the devotee who went back to Godhead. You know, so there's some benefit for them. So as long as that, but if they're not engaging you in Krishna conscious activity, then you can see that then it's something for discussion, and if there's no discussion, then for finding another situation. That's why intelligence must be used, but one can't use it as an excuse to not surrender. That's the point. Yeah. So that's generally most places, most authorities do engage people in proper activities. Though they as persons may be hard to deal with, their abilities to do that service may or may not be so good. You know, like that. But generally, so their personal dealings may be difficult, but the activities they engage you in are generally okay. So as long as that's there, then it's an opportunity to develop, you know, humility, tolerance, forgiveness, all those things. But if the activity, if the situation is not right for being engaged in Krishna consciousness, then you should find another situation that is. But it can't be out of trying to avoid surrender. Because many people, they can find fault in anything, you know. That's, so finding fault is not necessarily a real symptom of qualification, right? To find a fault means you have to compare something. So that means one uses intelligence. But if you decide whether it's a fault or not, that's the mind. So if someone's mind is not improved, they'll find fault in anything. But if the mind is improved, they'll only find fault in what is considered fault by guru sadhana, shastra, like that. So that's, one always has to be careful of that, because it's a double thing. It's not, many times it's either everyone else's fault or, yes, I'm so useless. But both are based on ignorance. No, others we work with, and then what's good we take, what's not good we leave. And then with ourselves, is what's useful, then we engage that in Krishna service. What's not useful, we drop that. Or we make a plan how to drop it.
Maharaj is also leaders. Sometimes it's the devotees who are leaders by themselves. And naturally they find that they can do it better. So it's time to move on and open themselves their own temple.
Yeah, no, that's there. That's also another option he's saying is one moves and one can do it. Prabhupada would do that. He had two answers to someone who would make a complaint about a temple president. One was, first do what they're doing, then talk. That would be for the person who doesn't have the qualification. And the other is, great, you do it, I'll take this temple president since they've proven themselves and take them and open some new project. So you get one of those two from Prabhupada. So it depends. If one has the ability, then it can be taken as an opportunity to do something. But in both cases, one has to be careful of the false ego. Like that. It's always a problem. That you get. Makes sense? Yeah.
So you're talking about form. Are certain forms more conducive or will certain forms not allow devotional advancement or feelings or whatever to manifest, and certain forms allow certain forms of feeling?
Means, are certain forms allowed and certain forms not allowed?
No, allow the devotion, the principle behind it to manifest itself.
Oh, okay. Are certain forms better for devotion manifesting and certain forms not? Yes, what's connected with the scriptures then is the better form, is the superior form. Because that has a way that it can be nicely dovetailed. Those forms that are not supported by Guru, Sadhana, and Shastra, those forms are more difficult, you know, to connect them. You know, sometimes they can be connected, but they actually have to be connected. You know, it's just like you'd have, I think it was, who was it? With the sword? Huh? Who? No, not that one. It's going all the water. Nilavar. So he built the third wall around the Srirangam temple. Big wall, very thick, very high. It's like 20 feet high, I don't know. 3-4 feet thick, something? You've never seen it. Big, thick wall. Big. So he built that. He built that by, he had three disciples. One could hide in his own shadow. One could open any lock. And the other could walk on water. And so then in the day they would do their service to the deity, and at night they would go out and use their specialties. And do Sankirtan for building the wall. So, you know. So it was directly connected. It was connected because they were building the Lord's wall. So even though it's not great, then it's theirs. But when Ramanuja, before he left, then he also, you know, sent those devotees back to Godhead. Because they wouldn't be able to function on their own without him and keep it in Krishna's service, nor would anyone else. You understand? Yeah.
The God that could walk on water set up fire.
Something, and then he walked back. Yeah.
Like
that. Something like that. So the point is, these things are there. So one has to be very, very careful and very honest in doing this. The point is, honesty is important. All these qualities we talk about, we have to start with ourselves. You know, honesty is important for us, then we have to be honest with ourselves. Honest doesn't mean facts and figures. It means what's the actual purpose behind something, our motive behind something, why we're actually doing it. You know, is it actually just? What is justice? You know, those kind of things. Does that make sense? Yes.
Is man a
foreigner?
Is
smart is remembering a form. Yeah, it's a form. It's a form that's used, it's very favorable in all of the forms, but it's specifically like a Bhagwa form. Hearing, chanting, remembering. Like that. But of them, even hearing and chanting is considered better forms than even remembering. Because sometimes one can remember or not. But hearing and chanting, one can always do. Even if one is not remembering, hearing and chanting can go on. So they're considered the topmost, is hearing and chanting. So even in occupation, for a Brahmin, the topmost occupation is studying the scriptures, teaching the scriptures. So that means hearing and chanting. You know, the topmost activity that they perform is japa. That's the best, is considered the best activity. And the best form of purification is reciting the scriptures. So you see, even within the Varnashram system, its most essential elements are still hearing and chanting. So it's the best. So smaranam is a form. But that'll be within the Bhagavad Pancharatrik. Like that. So it's definitely a good form. Why would you choose duty if you're working on fear?
If
everyone's fearful, why choose duty? Because by duty, there's the feeling that there'll be less loss. In the beginning, yes. That's why when the beginning, the duty being based on fear, that's why one has that the. It's pointed out that there's sakam and nishkam. Sakam means I'm doing it out of fear because then I don't want loss, I want gain. So then one may always be in a positive attitude, and so that moves forward like that. But that may be tested when there's loss. So because of one's previous piety and all that, one is always getting gain. And one is always performing pious activities, so more gain is always coming. But if for some reason that there was ever at any time some impropriety, then something at some point is lost, then immediately then there may be that fear will rise again, so the negative. So a lot of times it'll happen because of fear. But it's not a problem because it's connected to Krishna. That's the thing, is everything connected to Krishna, it doesn't matter. So even like Kamsa is fearful of Krishna, but he's always thinking of Krishna. So it's better than not. It's a step up. So just because we may start from that platform, that doesn't mean that we don't engage it. Because there isn't another alternative. One's on that platform, one doesn't have another alternative. So one just engages it. So out of fear, one is performing. One is going to Mangalarctic out of fear. Well, if I don't, what will happen? Or if I don't chant, or if I don't follow the principles, or if I don't, then what will happen? Then that's okay. Because then that inspires you to do the positive. To do something, and you're doing it for Krishna. It may be mixed, but you're doing it for Krishna. Then with time, then you start doing it because that's your duty. And you're not fearful. It's technically, fear basically is, in a major way, is lost at nishta. With anartha nivritti, because it's the anarthas that create the fear. You know, that's why the more attachment you have, the more fear there is, because there's more chance of loss. So that's why it's you see great devotees like Sudama Vipra. He's not worried about fear, therefore he can have unlimited wealth and be peaceful. Because he knows it's for Krishna's service. If it's there, he uses a lot for Krishna. And if nothing's there, then he uses whatever he's got for Krishna. So then there's no fear. Or Prahlada Maharaj, because he's servant of Krishna, therefore his father kills him or doesn't kill him, there's no problem, because he'll always serve the Lord. So there's no fear. So this is the platform, Nishtha, the fixed.
The most fearful
yeah. 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 Is that okay?
Maharaj spoke about faith. You know, faith is the most important thing. The activities which create faith and become truth. I just wanted to know situations where maybe the body is able to go to a situation where they have to get marks.
Get what?
Marks.
Marks.
Yes.
Oh, okay. I thought you said monks. You have to get some monks. Okay. So.
And then because maybe when we get this mark or that mark, and sometimes it breaks up our faith, what is the justice of the environment like that? Or is it a necessary form?
Well, that's another thing, because here we're discussing the fear. We're not discussing the detail of the form, right? It means you have traditional and you have modern forms, right? So in any case, especially for a student, there must be some kind of test at some point. You have to have a test, right? So without a test, how do you know if they're progressing? So the point is that by the mark you know how much you've progressed. If you're gaining what it is that the teacher wants you to know. So it is a method for a teacher to understand the progress of the student. Right? So it's one can have tests, one can do the continuous assessment, one can, there's different ways, whatever you check. I remember for one teacher, the Bhakti Shastri final exam, he had this big box, big metal box, and everybody had to come up to the box and take something from the box and then apply it. And how well they applied it, they got their mark. So everyone came and stood around the box. He opened the box. It was full of brooms. Handed everyone a broom, gave them a place to sweep, and then he saw how they swept. Their mood of sweeping, how well they swept, how well they cleaned up. You know, they put the broom back, what they did with the garbage. Because the point is Krishna is telling Arjuna to do your duty. And think of him and do it for him. And so then, here was the practical application. Yeah. So that was. So there's many ways that one could have a test. You know, but testing must be there. That is one of the elements of relationship between teacher and student. It's testing. If the devotee fails the test, how will it test his faith? Well, it depends on faith in what?
Whether am I competent to be a devotee because I failed?
If you fail, are you competent to be a devotee? Since when does being a devotee depend upon, you know, particular marks? Just like this, okay. Who can be the better devotee? The one who can eat 3 kilos of halava or the person who can only eat 100 grams of halava? And what about the person who can't eat halava so he eats the fruit? So which one of those three could be the devotee? You understand? Yes, the point is why make a standard that only if you pass the test with a certain amount of marks, you can be a devotee, and if you don't, you're not. Because that's testing study ability, one's absorption, you know, one's intelligence. That's what it's testing. Right? It's not testing whether you're a devotee or not. You know, does that make some sense? So the point is why are you even studying? What's your purpose in studying? Is it to please Krishna, or it's to please yourself, or it's to become, you know, the biggest pundit in the universe, or, you know, what is the purpose in studying? Why study?
So what you're giving that is something you need to explain to students before taking out something like that. Say, you find, say someone who may get really affected by the mark, you know, that you get devotees who come from different places to say a course. And then their reason for coming on the way is to do this course.
Mm-hmm.
Therefore, wherever they've come from, what is known that is always one of the course. Therefore, passing and failing becomes a big thing.
And it's a big thing, but is it a big thing on devotion, or was it a big thing on time and money? Where's the loss? Right? Because in devotion, there's no loss. You made your endeavor. You may have lost, you know, 4 months of time and, you know, $1,000. You know, that's another thing. So why base one's faith in Krishna on that? Otherwise, then that's artha. If you get artha, then this religion's good. If you don't get artha, this religion's bad. Or it's anxiety. You know, it creates so much anxiety. I joined this movement to get away from anxiety, and I'm getting anxiety. Therefore, this is not a good religion. Or it's knowledge. I've joined because of knowledge, so therefore, here's an opportunity for knowledge. I can't gain the knowledge, so therefore, I'm not interested in this religion. I'll go somewhere else. You know what I'm saying? So these are all... One has to see what is the motive. Why? Where's the value? Because otherwise, why would it be interpreted that way? That you pass or fail a test, and that tests your devotion. You know what I'm saying? It's a matter of who are you doing it for? Why are you doing this? That's where the test of devotion is. So that's the real question: is why is one coming from all around the world? Why is one spending so much money and so much time to study this? What is the purpose?
Purification.
Yeah, if it's purification, if it's this, that, so if you pass or fail, you can always do it again. The marks aren't great, or, you know. So it's a matter of did you gain from it? Because the point is the teacher cannot teach you everything. The teacher can teach you how to study and contemplate and apply. That's what they can do, because the scriptures is unlimited. What knowledge is there and its application is unlimited. So they can give you a glimmer, an idea of how to do it. You know? Just like you say, cooking, it's unlimited what you can do. But the methods of cooking and how it works, that the teacher can teach you. Then from there, you can unlimitedly go on and develop. Does that make some sense? So, like that, you can't teach everything. You can't teach every recipe in the universe. You know, you can teach a method by which you can cook. And you may, for example, give some recipes so that it's something that they can relate to. Because in the beginning they may not be able to relate to the concept or the, you know, the system of the cooking. But you can relate to a recipe, and then through the recipes you point out the system. Then, even though you've learned 10 recipes, but you can cook hundreds of preparations because you understand the system that works. So they can give you some idea of knowledge, how to study, how to apply it. That they can train you, but they can't train you in the whole thing. Does that make sense? So then if one's gained that, then one can go on and continue to study. If one didn't gain that, then yes, then there may be some loss. But then one knows that one has to try harder, or this is not one's field to spend one's time and money. Right? If studying doesn't work, then try something else. There's plenty of other activities. Does that make sense?
Become more attached as far as the form of the devotional service that we do. Maybe we're doing like some particular kind of service, and we just feel like, yeah, I don't do this service. And how we can make Krishna conscious, and I'm not out there distributing books or directly speaking to someone about Krishna privately. Instead, I have to, type. Data into the info base for the newsletter to get money from the new congregation, and I can't see that as a devotional service, and I can't surrender to that kind of. How do we become great, great, free from having to be attached to a particular form, and become more into surrendering to whatever is asked?
Okay, so the question is how to not be attached to the form and be, more willing to surrender to whatever is needed. First of all, it's not a problem being attached to the form. Because in the conditioned state, we have a form, a nature that has a particular form of expression. And the point is body, mind, and word should be engaged. So by using those forms that are closer to our conditioned nature, we will be the most engaged. Right? So then that's not a problem. Because the point is this, if one's purpose is, I'm doing this because then I'll be most Krishna conscious, what's the form? It's like, I want to do this service because then I want to distribute the books because then, every morning then they're going to call out my name and go, Hari Bal, and give me a cake. And if I type, data into the interface, it never go, Bhakta, Harold, typed in, 2,396 characters yesterday. Nobody says that, So if that's your purpose, then that's okay, you like that, then that's there, but that's still pretty bit mercenary, It's still very neophyte. But if it's a matter of this service, then I feel the most engaged, it engages the most aspects of my mentality and propensities. That's why I like it. And I can relate to it, I can do it nicely for Krishna. Then that's not a problem. That's normal. And an expert manager should be able to identify that. At the same time, you do have what's called emergency service. So it may be you're better at one thing, but there's an emergency, so for a certain amount of time one may perform that emergency service. Then it's just a matter of seeing that it's necessary, needs to be done, you see the bigger picture, and so then you take part. But at the same time, one should know one's limits, and the authority should also know the limits. They shouldn't think, okay, we found a guy and that's it. No, we found a guy, but it's not his nature. But he could do it, let's say, for 3 months. So they got 3 months to find someone else. If not, then they have to relieve him, and then the problem should be the leaders, not the persons. Because if they push him beyond the 3 months, then something will go wrong. Then neither you have someone doing it, nor do you have anyone out distributing the books. So that's called bad management. So it, from both sides it has to be taken care of. Right? We have to see, okay, what is our motive in doing it? If the motive is good, then if the opportunity is there, take it. And if the opportunity is not there, then take something that will engage something. Like that. So it's, we type information in, but that goes out to the people, and then they're preached to through that. So maybe you're not directly doing it, but it is happening. So you're indirectly connected with the preaching. Does that make some sense? Yeah. So then what's there? And then when the opportunity is there for a service that one feels more comfortable with, then one does that. So it's not a matter of that it has to be given up. That's not the point of surrender. Surrender is that one's body, mind, and words are engaged in the Lord's service. It's not that you're doing this and not that. You know, it can be used as a form if there's attachment. The problem is attachment is not a problem. It's being detached from Krishna that's the problem. You know what I'm saying? So attachment can be used in the Lord's service. That's fine. That's the thing. Why are we using this example here of women's attachment to their husband? Because Krishna is the husband, therefore it's perfect. Because if this example works, it means any other example would work, because this is the most attached. So it's engaged in Krishna's service, so it's fine. So a lot of times we make a mistake in the point of detachment that we don't do the work. But that was Krishna's, Arjuna's mistake. I'm not attached to the result, therefore I don't do the work. So that's jnana. That's the jnana mark. So that's off the razor's edge. So, oh, you're too attached to the service, this, that. What's the problem? Unless that service has absolutely no importance. Maybe he's acting independently, so that's the point you're showing to get at. So therefore, they should say, you're independent, not you're attached. Because otherwise you say it's attachment, then you create this false deep sense of detachment. You know? So the point is you're performing the duties, but with detachment. Right? Like previously, you're married, then but you have to be detached. I remember one devotee was getting get married. He was a brahmachari, you know, grew up with him. And then they're all, oh, I don't know about this, all the brahmacharis and this and that. And then they all got together and says, okay, you can, because he was going to put on white. You can put on white, but you gotta wear saffron copas. Like that. Then they felt, okay, it's okay. So there's this whole thing of, but it's then, you're detached means you don't interact with the family, don't deal with them, aren't nice to them, aren't considerate toward them, aren't sensitive towards them. That's the sign of detachment. No, that's a sign of a brute. Because if you're detached, it doesn't matter if you deal with it or not. That's actual detachment. If by dealing with it, it creates attachment, you're not detached. So that's called compulsion. Right? So that was taken as attachment. No, performing your duty with detachment, that's real detachment. That gets you liberation. The other one doesn't get you liberation. Yeah. Does that make some sense? So this is what's ununderstandable about it. It's bewildering about it. Is that the form is done, it may seem like attachment, but it doesn't matter because the soul by definition is attached. Right? It's energy, so it has to attach itself to the energetic.
That's an eye-opener.
Yeah.
Soul by definition is attached.
It can't be. By definition, Krishna, the energetic, he is detached. He's the only one. That's it. Braja Krishna is the only one that's completely, absolutely detached.
Even the Vilas
mantra. Yeah, even all the expansions of Krishna, even though they're independent in their relationships, are still attached to Krishna. Because they're expanding. Yeah. So the soul is attached. So the problem is not attachment. It's that the attachment's not on Krishna. Right? But you don't want to create this pendulum swing where now the politically correct phrase is no, attachment's okay. It's just a matter of attachment, everything's attachment, this, attachment, that. No. Of the two, detachment is more the word of the day than attachment. Attachment to Krishna, detachment from the material energy. So if you're dealing with anything in the material world, detachment is the principle. And if you're dealing with anything to do with Krishna, then attachment is the principle. So one has to know how to apply it. Otherwise, then now it's, oh no, it's fine, I can be with your family, you have to be with the family, you have to put it on again. No, but we said you still have to be detached. You're supposed to do it because of duty. But now it's like, it's okay to be attached, so only because I'm attached, now I'm taking care of the family. And if I'm detached, I don't take care of the family. No. Your duty is to take care of the family, but you must be detached to do that. Because in attachment, no one really takes care nicely. Not in the material world.
Emotionally.
Yeah, because you're too involved, you can't deal with it properly. The more detached you are, the more you can deal with it. Right? Like the parent gets on your case about something. And it's got so many emotions and this and that, and it's something painful. But the grandparents get on your case about it, it's really clean. Because they couldn't care less if you do it or not. They said, yeah, if you do that, this will happen. You know, because they've been there, done that. And so then you kind of go, no. The parent, no, you can't do that, this, that, so many things like that. And it's kind of, you know, because the detachment. So detachment is the principle that makes things work. Detachment makes attachment work. Because Krishna is detached, therefore the attachment of living entities works. Yeah, because the point is when there's detachment pulls. As soon as you're attached, the others becomes, right? The man becomes very attached to the women become more confident and this and that and more controlling and all that. Right? As soon as the man becomes attached, the women become more attached that way. It's just automatic. It's just, you just have its movement of energy. You move it one way, the other one moves the other. You pull it back this way, it moves this way. That's the way it is. It just functions like that. You know? Okay, you know, let's go to the temple. No, I don't want to go. This. Okay, you stay here, I'm going. Immediately. Okay? So that's how it works. But if you sit there, no, you gotta go to the temple, this, that, no, then they get more and more thing in there because you're attached and it's clashing. It's just like, okay, you stay here, you know, I'll go to the temple, nice, you know, static kirtan. You can stay here in the nice, boring house and you do nothing, you know, go ahead. How are you, Paul? You know, and the kid, okay. So detachment makes it work. That's the key, but it's the key that we've never, ever thought about. And by logic, it doesn't seem to be right. Because you're attached, you do it. If you're detached, you don't do it. But here, the principle is because you're detached and you're dutiful, you do it. Therefore, you get the best result. Because the result's not for us. We're working on the principle, I do the activity, I get the result, I enjoy the result. But the point is that the jiva can't enjoy the result because the result's Krishna's. Only Krishna can perform the activity, get the result, and enjoy it. The energy can perform the activity, get the result, and give it to Krishna. That's the whole point. That is a really tough one. Right? The man who's the most detached in the house and he performs his duties the best, he has the most opportunities. The women will deal with him the best, he'll have the most positive interaction, the most service, most facilities, but because he's detached, he can't enjoy it. He just experiences the nice atmosphere, but he can't drop it down to the sensual platform. It can't become his gain. As soon as he does, then he's out of that, and then he doesn't get it. So that's what he's saying. The sleep, because you're sleeping, then you can perceive that it's nice, but you can't focus on it. As soon as you focus, it's gone.
It's all a mental.
Right. Yeah. It's all a mental game. That's why it's so funny when you hear devotees sitting around and taking things so seriously on certain platforms. You know, especially modern, contemporary interaction and social values and all that. It's kind of like, it's very laughable.
The platform.
Yeah. So it's, yeah. So does that make some sense? So there's a very subtle thing there. It gets very technical. So that's the point is, if you're detached, you have it. And as soon as you want it, it's not there. Does that make sense? It's just like, you take the how you say, the man is working, there's so many women there. And he's just interacting normally, going about, not noticing what they look like. And he can be there all day with them. But as soon as he looks and tries to see how good looking they are, immediately it's like, what are you looking at? You understand? So it means you can have, it means you can be in the environment, but it's not yours. As soon as you try to claim it, you lose it. That's how it works. That's the way energy functions. So only the energetic can have it and enjoy it, because it is him. It's not something separate. So the oneness, Krishna sees the oneness, therefore it's with him. We see the difference. Yeah, when it's done right, Krishna's in the middle. So Krishna consciousness is there, the experience is there, good experience, the good result is there. Everything works positive. But the key is detachment and doing it for Krishna. It means being in knowledge so you perform it properly. You see its place. Detached, that you're not interested in the result. And you're detached means you're attached to Krishna, so you're doing it for Krishna. So that's what the Gita is explaining. Because he's attached, therefore he can't function. He's detached, then he doesn't want to function. No, you have to function with detachment. Then we see, that's what he did, and we're still talking about Arjuna on the battlefield. Everything works like this. As soon as you're attached, means it's just like this. You're cooking, and you think, yeah, this is going to be great, this and that. You'll generally find, guaranteed, it's the worst prep. Guaranteed. As soon as you think, yes, it's happening, then you lose, it's gone. Because that's the thing, as soon as you become conscious of that, I mean, focus on that, you lose it. So that's there in anything. Yeah. Yeah. I'm the doer. So it's in any form, in knowledge, you know, in management, in business, in art, one always has to be detached from it. You know, because it's Krishna's doing it, so one becomes the medium for it. That's the thing here. The queens are the medium or the instrument. This verse is an instrumental voice. Like that. The word that's prominent here is the women. They're the instrument to Krishna's tasting this rasa. So their movements become something for him to go through. So it becomes... So does that make any sense?
Yeah.
Getting... Yeah. Okay. We'll get back. We'll just get there. Yes.
Maharaj, please allow me to ask a question concerning surrender. So in Bhagavad Gita, excuse me, in Bhagavad Gita, chapter 2, verse 7, Arjuna says, "Now I am your disciple and a surrendered soul to you. Please instruct me." But in the first verse of chapter 3, Arjuna seems very confused. He asks Krishna that, "If you think intelligence is much better than food to work, and then why do you want me to be engaged in this ghastly warfare?" So, the day before yesterday, in Janakas previous Gita class, he mentioned that throughout the whole Bhagavad Gita, Krishna is talking about Bhakti Yoga, but Arjuna couldn't understand it, so he take it as yeah, sometimes you take it as karma. So that means at that point he's not surrendered, but in the previous chapter he claimed that he surrendered. So this reminds me of the kind of phenomenon in ISKCON. We join ISKCON, we get the initiation from a guru, and we claim ourselves to be surrendered souls, to be surrendered disciples. But actually we have nothing to do with surrendering. So can you please help me to analyze this phenomenon? Also, concerning surrender under two terms. One is Atman Vivekana, surrendering everything to Krishna, and the other term is Sharanagati, that convey the meaning of I am the property of Krishna. So it is said the latter terms contain a more intimate meaning. So does that mean that in the first one, the previous one, Atman Vivekana contains a tinge of fear? Because out of fear, so I surrender everything to you. But the later one, because I am your property, I am Krishna's property, so that's kind of completely out of love and devotion. So I'm confused about that.
Can you get all here? Yeah. So, the surrender doesn't mean that there's not interaction. See, because there's two platforms that we, two main spheres. There is the tattva, or knowledge, and then there's rasa, or the actual application of that knowledge. So the tendency sometimes is we view something from one and not the other. So we're looking at this surrender from the element of tattva, meaning that this is, surrender means you just surrender and just do what you're told and this and that. But the point is there is interaction. Because technically, in this case, guru and disciple is parental ras. So it has servitorship in it. It also has friendship in it. Right? They're all contained in there. So then, it doesn't mean that he can't ask questions. Just because one asks a question doesn't mean that one is not surrendered. Yeah. But if it's in a challenging mood, that's lack of surrender. But positive inquiry, submissive inquiry, that's where Prabhupada uses that. Pratiprasna means submissive inquiry. Then that is what's required. If you have that, then that's enlivening, because the point is that someone only likes to teach someone who can learn. If you just tell and there's no response, it's just like I come up to you and give you something, you know, and you just sit there. Maybe you've accepted it, but it's kind of like, was it okay, and this and that, and you want to see a response. So the point is the teacher gives knowledge, and it's natural that there's a response. That's what Prabhupada asks for questions. Because if there's questions, means the brain is working. If brain is working, then the platform for exchange is present. Does that make sense? So his questioning, because he's simply trying to, in other words, he's surrendered because he's trying to understand what Krishna said. So in the second chapter, he first explains Shankya, right, up to 39. Then at 40, he goes into Karma Yoga. So then the Shankya then sounded great because it's Gyan. The Karma Yoga, then that means this application. One was Sambandhya, the other is Abhideya. So you're going to apply that. So he's saying, well, if it's knowledge, then you know that this and that, so you're not killing and no one's killing and the soul's never killed and he's foolish who thinks he kills or is killed. And so therefore it indicates no activity. You know? So then Arjuna's great, I'll go to the forest and all this. But then he says, no, but now you work without desire for the result. Because that is, with that, in other words, with the Shankya understanding, you perform your activities. Right? So that's the meaning. Krishna says, with knowledge, perform your duties. Right? But that's not enough. It has to be done for him. And thinking of him. Right? So because he's already given the essence. That's why the second chapter is the essence of all of it. Because he's already given all those elements. But it's not brought out. So therefore in the third chapter, then he talks more on what is the activity. What if he expands on that karma? But then the question is that's the way, but what about the knowledge? So then the knowledge, then in the fourth. Fifth, then he combines them. Right? But then one must do it remembering Krishna. Therefore the sixth chapter. Right? But then, even that's not enough, if you're going to remember Krishna, but Kamsa also remember Krishna. It has to remember with devotion. Therefore, then the seventh cultivating and the twelfth. Right? Does that make sense? So still you're having these same elements. Then you have to get down to applying it. And then you get the technical analysis then in the 13th through 18th chapters. And that tells you more technically how it's functioning. Because otherwise the mind just accepts and rejects based on that, but you technically understand what's going on. So if someone has that ability, then it's nice. And if they don't worry about it, because the other chapters are enough. Does that make sense? than on the thing of Atman Vivekananda Visharanagati, then it's the same thing. One, you've surrendered everything, but the other is the method through which you surrendered. Like that. One could see that. Or one is just the principle of surrender, and one is the other, that interaction, the mentality. So you always have those aspects. Atman Vivekananda means just everything, the principle that everything's given to the Lord. But now, how is that going to be shown? Right? That's going to be shown by identifying as a devotee. It's going to be shown by being meek and humble, by accepting what's favorable for Krishna, what's not, seeing Krishna as Krishna's maintainer and one's protector.
So, Maharaj, that means there's no hierarchy between these two terms?
Not technically. One is application, one is the knowledge. That's what I'm saying. One is sambandha, one's avideya. So your Sharanagati is your avideya, your Atmanivedana is your sambandha. That's the knowledge. I am servant of Krishna, therefore I surrender everything to Krishna. But that process of surrendering, that's Sharanagati.
The Maharaj is not like Krishna is asking for the things. He give it all. Surrender already is with law.
Yeah.
I'm already involved in law.
Yeah, it means you involve instead of, yeah. It's sharing, that's the thing. In other words, you're sharing your life with Krishna. You completely share your life with Krishna, Krishna will be completely involved. So however you share with Krishna, that's how he interacts.
That's saying that fear is only below Varnashram.
Yeah. The fear means fear will be also within Varnashram, but it's not the basis of the actual system. The lower element is one performs the duties, just like you have in the Bhagavatam. You know, the sun and the moon and the wind blows and everything happens out of fear of Krishna. So in the Varnashram, also out of fear, everyone performs the duties. It's mainly fear of punishment. Right? That's the point, is there. A fear of punishment there. So that makes the Varnashram work in the beginning. But ultimately it's got to be as one's not interested in the result, one's just simply doing it to please Krishna. Because we're conditioned, so that's the facilities we have. So we engage that conditioned nature in Krishna's service, and he's happy. And he'll reciprocate with that. So then it works. Okay. Yes. Oh, excuse me. Who goes first? Then we'll get back to you. Detachment requires self-security.
How is that?
This is a very good point. Detachment requires. He says it appears that detachment requires self-security. How do you go from fear to duty? Because in both, in fear, well, duty is there, but then there's the element. I guess you could say, yeah, you become more secure. You've seen, I perform the duty, it works. So one can see is that it's important, you just do it. That would be one element. Like this. Because fear is the original. If you can say there's any original sin, it's that. Because fear is another form of envy. Right? It's another manifestation of envy. So you're envious means you're fearful. Because if you're only envious of something you're fearful of. You're not envious of something you're not fearful of. You know? Does that make sense? Because envy means that you feel that something's lost or you don't have, and the other person stands in the way of that. So it's either you have it or they have it. You can't even share it. Right? So it's like that. So does that make sense? So it's like lowest fear, that envy, then is I have it or Krishna has it. You can't have both. You can't both. Jealousy is he has it, I also want it. So we can both have it, but still the relationship is not there. Right? It's based on chivalry then. Right? Then next you'll get where you can share it, but still you're getting what you want out of it, they get what they want out of it. You know, you'll take care of their needs, you'll take care of your needs. So you're taking care of them, that you can say it's a relationship, but it's pretty common, pretty ordinary. The other then is this relationship here, the queen. So then there it's 50-50. It's shared, but it's I get what I want, you get what you want. But then you get Vraja, where it's shared, but it's only for Krishna. Does that make some sense? Okay. So, like that.
So, I have two questions. One, I want to just clarify real quick about this. I forget how to ask the question. So that if you're doing something and it goes nicely, then how can you think about it so it goes nicely? You know, like if you were saying about putting whatever you do,
looking at it means you're not looking at the experience. What we're talking about, if you could hear? You know, so it's talking about that then aparoksha, that as soon as you focus on the experience, then you lose the experience.
For the activity is going nicely, you're doing something, it's going nicely, how you think about it?
That's the whole point, is you just think about doing it nicely and it happens. You will experience that it's nice. But if you think about the niceness of it, you lose it. You can think about what elements will make it nice, but those are all part of the duty. Does that make sense? You're performing the duty. So you know that by doing this or by doing that, it will make it nice, but the experience that comes from it, you can tell it's there, but you can't directly deal with it. Because as soon as you do, then you're not doing the activity.
So then, okay, so the other thing I was going to ask you about is, you're saying about fear, is fear a relationship with Krishna, actually?
Is fear a relationship with Krishna?
No, fear is actually fear of a or our
relationship. Yeah, a relationship with Krishna, yeah.
And so then, how to get over that fear?
Means, oh, how do we get over the fear? You just have to see where it comes from. Means if you look at it, basically you have no problem with, you know, serving Krishna and all that. But then there may be some areas of attachment that we're afraid of losing because, you know, we're not in control of it, so we don't enjoy those areas. So then we know that those are areas to engage in Krishna's service. Okay. Fear me is a symptom of not having a relationship in that area. So therefore, let's say, okay, I'm going out and then something happens and then I get fearful, right? I'm worried about that, you know, something's going to happen physically, right? So that means then there's a need to engage that element of fear or the body in Krishna's service, right? We're walking down a dark alley, we hear some noise that does not sound auspicious, right? So then we are fearful for the loss or damage to the body. So that means the body is important to us, and because of the body, then it is getting in the way of our surrender to Krishna, right? Because that's where the fear lies, is with the body, right? Does that make sense? Yeah, so that means then we take that body, you know, or if it was loss of life or whatever it was, you know, health or, you know, and engage that in Krishna's service. So we engage the body in Krishna's service. Then it will start to cut that fear. Because what's separating us from Krishna is the desire for the body, to control and enjoy the body. Because fear means I'm not in control. that sound sounded like it's something that could give me trouble. I'm not in control of that sound. I don't know what it is. You know what I'm saying? Does that make sense or not? You're there, you hear this sound. Okay, it sounds like about, you know, 20, you know, how you say, foaming at the mouth, you know, wolves. Okay, now you're not in control of those 20 wolves, right? You don't know them, you know, you don't feed them every day, you don't pat them on the head. And, you know, from what you've heard that, you know, wolves, especially in a pack, then, they're, at least they have no problem like that. You'll be definitely invited for lunch, you know, but they may, you know what I'm saying? So you don't have control over that. So you can't enjoy that situation. Therefore, there's fear. Because you've lost control. So the whole point is, in a sense, control of the body is important for you. Therefore, control your body and engage it in Krishna's service. So wherever your fears are, those fears, that areas, those should be engaged in Krishna's service. So what do you? So what do you fear? It's just like this. What do you fear for love?
Okay. Well, there's this delicious one thing. It's like surrendering to authorities. There's one thing.
Okay. So therefore, that's important to surrender to authority because you have a fear of surrendering to authority because you want to be the authority. So either therefore become an authority. You know, and engage that authority-ness in Krishna's service. But to be a good authority, you have to have authority above you, because potency comes down. So that means still, okay, I'm afraid of authority, because then I'm not in control. So therefore, I can be, let me put myself in a position where I'm in control, but I'm in control under another authority. So I have control, but I'm being controlled. And let me do that for Krishna. So then you're engaging that fear in Krishna's service.
You were saying, in relationship to your other point about that, what you just said earlier, you were saying, what is fault? And then you said about there is fault according to Guru Shastra Sada. You didn't say what that was. What is according to Guru Shastra Sada? What is fault?
What is?
Fault.
Fault.
Yeah. You said, you tapped on Bhagavatam, you said, well, is it according to Guru Shastra and Sadhana?
That was today. Okay, can you say what it was in relationship to? No, that's okay. You need to give more. It's because the point is, it's...
So then what is all
according to? You'd have to give the context. Guru Sadhana and Shastra, the fault, but what were we talking about that we were
talking about? About you were saying there is either... There's two ways about what dealt with. The person was incompetent or the person was competent.
Mm-hmm.
So then he said if the person was competent, then, you know, okay, great. You know, print it out of the person somewhere else. If that person was incompetent, then he's an idiot. He should shut up.
Mm-hmm. So what's the question?
So, the fall. So if that person who doesn't want to, or has a fall, finds fault with the authority, so then we have to, like you were saying, then we have to analyze what's fault according to Guru Shastra and Sadhana. So then how do we...
Okay, it means we have to see what is wrong. That may have been what we're meaning there is you have to have something, a standard to compare something to. You see, is many times when we explain these things, one will start with something generic that applies to anything. Right? Then you start to bring it, because there's a principle at work there. Then you bring it in line with how it would be applied. So then it has to have some direction, some choice. Right? So the first is we're just establishing that principle. Then the next is that there must be something, how are you going to decide what is right and wrong? So then that is given by Krishna. That is given through Guru, Sadhu, and Shastra. There you decide, is this right or not? Otherwise it will be subjective and we'll decide by ourselves. I like it, so it's right. I don't like it, it's wrong. No, it's got to be according to Guru, Sadhu, and Shastra. This is right or this is wrong. Does that make some sense?
Yeah.
That's why I said you have to go by what Krishna says. People put all kinds of stuff on what Krishna says. Okay, so then that means that that brings out, that that projects the point of lack of faith. So then all that one can do is go by one's own opinion, because everybody's got an opinion, so therefore why should I listen to their opinion? My opinion is this is good, so therefore I should just function on my own. Okay, but the point is we do see the example of the acharyas. And so if that's there, then take what they have said and they have done, and through your understanding, apply it. Okay, now if you're taking to the point of the acharyas have their own opinion, then you've got a long time to stay in this material world. Yes, so therefore take it, go off on your own, do your own thing according to what Prabhupada says in his books. If you can't feel that anybody else, it's just a subjective opinion, then take it, use it, apply it yourself, at least there's focus, direction, there'll be activity. Otherwise there'll be ignorance and one will do nothing. So activity is better than nothing. Therefore, you know, pack up, move out, get your own thing, make your own, your own economic, foundation, create your relationships within that, and do that all according to how you understand Prabhupada's books. Then you don't have to worry about anyone's other subjective opinion, you only have your opinion to deal with. So success and failure is then in your hands. That you do it, you got it right, it worked, you didn't get it right, you failed, but you can't blame anyone else.
It sounds like a very American.
Yeah, but this is what Prabhupada told Americans who had this attitude. There was a devotee in Hawaii, everybody just said, he said, just do your own thing. He lived outside the Sikrihasta. He did his own thing. So you do your own thing.
So how can one check oneself if one's in that position?
So then you have to see, can you work with anybody? Do you trust anybody? Is there anyone you trust? Or do you trust them in different areas? Somebody you trust in, okay, they got a good angle on sadhana. Someone else has a good angle on, this aspect of service or that aspect and that. And can you put enough together to sustain yourself? And if so, great. If you can't, then you got to fill it in yourself. So the point is, faith has to be somewhere. If you have it in nobody, at least you got to have faith in what your own opinion. Otherwise, you can't function at all. Right? But you may be a little lonely, but whatever.
So it seems like your answer is tough luck.
It's not a matter of tough luck, it's a matter of, what is the alternative? If you have no faith in anybody, then that means you have faith in yourself. And that's it. So therefore, if you have faith in yourself, take the books, go for it. Point is you have to be engaged in the Lord's service, and you have to do it under the authority of the acharyas. So here's Prabhupada's books. Take it, use it, go for it. Point is then there's responsibility. Then there's the lack of wanting to take responsibility. That is also then an element here. So we have the element of lack of faith, but then there's also the lack of desire to take responsibility. We don't have faith, but we want everybody else to organize it for us. And if it goes wrong, it's their fault. But this one, then, you have faith in others, then take the responsibility yourself. So if something goes wrong, it's yours. You can't have both. Kids can, yes. Kids just sit around, do nothing, pass school and urine all over the place, yell, scream, eat whatever they want, and take no responsibility. It works great. But, you know, once you get a little older, then it kind of like loses it. I mean, of course, I have heard that they make adult diapers, yes. But still, you still got to have some change it for you. So you got to find somebody, you know, or you got to be independent and take the responsibility yourself. So you're either dependent upon others in some relationship or another, or you're independent and you control it yourself, though still you'll be dependent on others, but there'll be a sense of control that you are doing it yourself and it'll go more nicely.
Yeah. So how to break it?
Well, it's either you analyze it and then see, okay, what is it you don't have faith in, and can you find the faith anywhere? And if not, then by doing it, then you'll see what it's like and how tough it is and how everything doesn't work perfectly. And you have to make compromises in that because you're in the material world. Then you may start to appreciate other authorities who, on a material detail, make compromises, though they maintain the principle of Krishna consciousness. You know, it's just like you decide, okay, good halwa, let us take one recipe. Okay, one part butter, one part suji, you know, one part milk, one part water, and one part sugar. Okay? Now let us say that we don't have that much butter. So how to cook it with less butter? Or we'll say we don't have milk. Right? You know, so how are you going to do it? Okay, if you don't have water, you don't have suji, then you don't bother cooking the preparation. Yeah? You understand? So you're going to make some compromises. And so you say, well, hey, that's not the ideal, you know, halwa recipe. You know, how could he have me cook that? Because there isn't enough butter to do it that way. So then by doing it yourself, then you'll start to appreciate that, yes, the material world is not perfect. This idea that everything's going to be perfect and just and right, that's an idea for fools. Because the material world, you do the best, the Prabhupada says, you make the best of a bad bargain. That's as good as you can get. The material body is already a bad bargain. It's very limited. Being in the material world, the time and space is very limited. You know, so it's already a bad bargain, right? Plus, does that make sense? So, already compromise is there. Plus, it's that you're trying to put on the charades of that everybody here thinks of God. Everybody in the material world thinks they're God, so they try to be the center. So that's the difficulty. You're not part of something, you're the center of something. So that's the Vedic is trying to take you from being the center of the universe to being part of the universe. That's what the Vedic culture is for. Otherwise, the child thinks he's the center of the universe. Everything goes around him. When he wants to eat, he eats. When he wants to sleep, he sleeps. When he wants to play, he plays. Well, anything he wants. So that's okay when he's little, but as he gets older, then he's got to fit in. He's got to go from anamoy to pranamoy at some point. You know, and at some point he has to take responsibility, so he's got to go to manamoy. He's got to take up duties. And if you want to perform your duties properly, you have to get the gyanamoy, because there has to be that knowledge, otherwise how does it work? And everything in the material world is useless anyway. It's temporary, so unless it gets to the point of devotion, it's not eternal. So you have to come to anamoy. Oh, okay. So it just means the platform of sensuality, extended sensuality, platform of, let's say, emotions, you know, religious duties, experience, then the platform of, fourth one's the platform of intelligence, and the fifth one's the platform of transcendence. Okay. This is Upanishad. Upanishads, this is the five levels of consciousness. And what we were describing before, that what do you call it? pratyaksha, paroksha, aparoksha, and hoksaja, aprakrita. That's the same thing, but how you gain the knowledge in those fields. Right? Anamoy, pranamoy, manamoy, jnanamoy, and vijnanamoy, anamoy. Those are the fields themselves. And the other is how you gain the knowledge in those fields. So that's that. Right? So just you have to see, is there anyone, anywhere, that you can have faith in and work with? If you can, work with them, and work with them how much you have faith to work. Right? And what you can't, then you fill in yourself. But take responsibility for the part you fill in. It's not someone else's fault.
So what you can or what you can't
fill in yourself? No. What you have to fill in yourself. What you can't find someone else of authority or that you want to work with, those areas, fill it in yourself. Does that make sense? Okay. It's like you trust that the temple devotee can give you some service, you know, whatever it is for the deities. Okay. But you don't trust them for your maintenance. So get your own maintenance together, and when it comes to service for the deities, then you work with them on that. Right? And if you can trust working for someone else that they're going to give, work for someone else. You can't do that, work for yourself. So in other words, where you can find others, work with them. Where you can't, then do it yourself. But take the responsibility. If you go out there and try to create your own economic situation and you can't do it, then you're at fault, not someone else. That's responsible, that's mature. Then you can see, okay, I can't do it, so therefore I have to depend upon someone else. So therefore, let me seriously reassess, you know, what I'll get. Because if I do it myself, I get nothing. And the reason I did it is because others were providing, but less than what I was wanting. So if I provide it myself, I get zero. So then what they're offering is better than what I'm offering. Does that make sense? Yeah. So like that. So that's the point. If you take responsibility, then you'll either be successful or then you'll appreciate what others are doing. One or the other. Like that. But there has to be that cooperative spirit. And if you can't cooperate, then go off to the forest. There's plenty of places, right? I'm saying Amazon jungle is pretty much uncharted. So there's plenty of space out there. Just watch out for the curare.
Yeah.
Has
the
Master
Teacher ever
mentioned
that the bhakti is evidently the goal that we see in the practical sense? One action is useful, like anything, in many cases. So while preaching, how do we approach Varnashram?
How do we approach Varnashram? Varnashram is part of Abhideya, which is your process. You have relationship, process, and goal. So Varnashram is part of the process. Right? It's a forum for relationships. It helps. We have a relationship with Krishna, we have a relationship with the devotees. So then the Varnashram helps in that. Like that. It's only an assistant. It's not, therefore we don't preach Varnashram. As part of the process, then we preach that. The goal is to serve love for Krishna. So that's beyond Varnashram. But by engaging in Varnashram, then one's attachments that take us away from Krishna, we can connect to Krishna. And that way then we both get our needs and free ourselves from it and develop devotion for Krishna. Right? Does that make sense? What's the difference between the surrender of those in Goloka and in Vaikuntha? In Vaikuntha, there's a sense of liberation. So, even though it's purely spiritual, still there's their specific spiritual, fulfilling their own spiritual need. they want to be on the same planet as the Lord, be a intimate associate with the Lord. They want to have the same opulence as the Lord, the same form as the Lord. So then, and with that, then they'll interact with the Lord. They'll serve the Lord. So then, that's okay, but that means, so it's spiritual, it's purely spiritual, but there's still that element of what they want from it. But then in Goloka, then that will be lessened. And in Braj, that's absent. Like that, because it means that's the point. Adarshanam marmahatam karotuva. So adarshanam means you're not necessarily intimate associate or on the same planet. So right there, that cuts too. And opulence isn't what's important. And you don't need the same form of the Lord, because rasa is tasted more in difference. How do we develop the mood of surrender to Braj? That's by associating with the Brajvasas. Like that. So then through reading Prabhupada's books, then we associate with him and those devotees from that realm. So then we see. We read his books, then you understand, and then you read the Krishna book, read Chaitanya Charitamrita, read Nectar Devotion.
He definitely is a Brajavasa.
Hmm?
He definitely is a Brajavasa.
Yeah. Yeah. So like that. So you follow in the footsteps of the Brajavasa, which means here. Here's a Brajavasi. And we follow that move. Like that. And then the example is set through other Brajavasis. Does that make sense? So how do you engage, if one's fear is how other people see you, and that, how do you engage that in the Lord's service? So that means then doing everything right is very important. So then one should educate oneself on what's right. And try to improve like that. You know, whatever is the area, because it's not in everything that you're fearful of. You know, someone's worried about what they might say about you. Someone's worried about what you look like. Someone's worried about what you do is approved. Or, you know what I'm saying? So that you have to then identify what are the areas of social acceptance that are important. Does that make sense? Then those should be then focused on and then engaged, improved. Does that make sense? Because, see, the problem comes is we just want to be accepted the way we are. But that means it's a one-sided relationship. If you have a point and then everything has to come to that, that's not relationship. Relationship means it's dynamic. So if, therefore, everyone expects you to be like this, then you have to make that step. By you making that step, they'll take a step. What if you can't do anything about the faults? We can always do something about the faults. We have to see what's the principle of the fault. Yeah, but then either don't worry about it or get it together. If you can't do anything about it, why should anybody else be able to do anything about it? Okay, so then people are worrying about it, so it creates anxiety. So then you can either move in a different circle where people don't worry about it. Right? Change your association. Or try to analyze what it is and make the endeavor. Because by intelligence, one can do anything new. It's slower. It means it's much easier when you're young and you develop, you know, various activities and habits and values. It's easier. But one can do it at any time because the soul is eternal. And intelligence is always available, and the mind still works in the same way. The main thing that slows down is an adult's false ego. You have an idea how things work. Just like the other day, we had an
idea of an adult.
Huh?
An idea of an adult.
Yeah, I'm an adult, so I already know. Just like you had the one math example given for the kids. You take 9 dots, right? And with 4 lines, connect those dots without lifting the pencil from the paper. right? And basically, every way you try, you can't connect the dots. There'll always at least be one, if not two, dots that are not connected. Right? Because we think you have to work within the space that's designated by those nine dots. Right? Because you want to get in an angle, but you can't, because the only angle you can do is the diagonal. You can't get the ones above that or anything else. But the solution is you go past the third dot and keep going. Right? And then when you come back, then you catch the other ones and you keep going. And then you can come back and then go out the middle. Then you get all of them. Because we're conditioned to think, okay, the thing is this, you got your nine dots, and I only work with the nine dots, but there's something beyond nine dots. Those nine dots are in space. They're dots in space, but there's more space. You understand? So then it's a matter of looking at it, well, maybe there is, one can always change it when applies intelligence. Because the point is, okay, people are complaining about this. Okay, I can't do it, this means I don't want to change. Or one either has to acknowledge, yes, I'm like that, and then give up the false ego, if you absolutely don't value that change at all. Then you just have to get out, okay, yeah, I'm like that. You know, yeah, they never remember anything. Yeah, I can't remember anything. So therefore you tell people, they say, you got to do this, oh, I'll never remember. You know I never remember like that. So then you just accept it, and you go with it, and the ego is in the way. So the fear is coming from the ego. Or it's a matter of, okay, well, how to do it? And how to remember it? We start write things down, or do something, and that you get the habits to develop. So one or the other, either accept your weakness and give up the false ego, or take up the challenge and come to the standard. One or the other, but to stay in the middle is ignorance, because then it's neither are you properly situated, and neither are you situated with relationship with others. And if by doing one or the other or both, it still doesn't work, then change your association. Social interactions. When people take social interactions so seriously, meaning that it's what I should probably define that. Meaning when the thing itself is not important according to Guru, Sadhu, and Shastra, or is not supported by Shastra, it's taken very important, very. Just like, let's say, political correctness is taken as so important, a particular word you use. Now, where is that coming from? It's a New Age concept. So the devotees that get so bent out of shape about a word that's used when it's all semantics, then it's very sad. Because then their whole platform themselves and their relationships with others is all based on what is politically correct today that's established by someone else. So that means their life is controlled by the mass. So they're a sheep, even though they claim to be a free individual thinker. But no, they're a sheep. Right? So then, that's there. One could say, now if your interest in important political correctness is important to you, then yes, that's discussed in the Shastras, called Arthashastra. It's called diplomacy. Because one will say, political correctness is a euphemism, it sounds nice. But political means politics. That means it's diplomacy. And if I say that's diplomacy, then immediately that got a politically incorrect word. No. This, we're trying to, it's this, and it's considering the people. No, it's just pure politics. Political correctness is politics. That's why the word politic is used there. And it just means what is diplomatically correct that works and gets your work done. You have an activity, you want to get a result, therefore by using this word that people identify in this way, then it will be comfortable with it, I'll get my result. And if I use the wrong word, they're uncomfortable with it, I won't get my result. So it's pure politics. And it's based simply on people's whims. So if you make your life on that, you've got the shallowest life on the planet, because it simply will move according to whatever way the wind is blowing in people's minds. So, I guess we should feel sorry or compassionate for such people. Right? Not in a patronizing way, of course, because that would be politically correct. But, you know, in that they don't have a life, right? That's where the term get a life comes from. So then the thing comes up is that, no, but according to Arthashastra, then yes. So therefore, then, according to the principles of Arthashastra, use that political correctness important for it, use it for Krishna. And then find situations in which diplomacy has to be used and use it correctly for Krishna. Then it's engaged, it's according to Guru Sadhu and Shastra, it'll take you back to Godhead. Otherwise, the other one will just take you to hell. It's not going to take you anywhere.
So the first politics is between the soul and God.
The original politic, yes. Yeah, who's God?
Too small.
Yeah, yeah. And because we're so small and Krishna's so big, he finds it funny. So we take ourselves seriously. This means the term in English would be taking yourself too seriously. That would be the more correct term for the reality. Sometimes you use words that devotees use. They catch on these words. Reality, or it's real, it's natural, or there's a whole plethora of these kind of words. So you take them, but because I'll use them in a different context, it doesn't have a thing. But what it means is taking themselves too seriously. Means you're taking the process of interaction seriously, but if you take what you're doing, that is the most important at the exclusion of everybody else, and your perception and your results are the most important thing, then you got a problem. It's got to be that it's Krishna's in the center. And the results are Krishna's. We identify ourselves with Krishna. So therefore, then we try to make things work. So we take that seriously. What I'm meaning there is we take ourselves so seriously that therefore we can't socially function. You know, of course, you get a lot of people together take themselves so seriously, and then they create a very dynamic association. You know, and they're serious and no one else is. So you get that also. But it's... Does that make some sense? Yeah. I think this would be last point.
Well, I'm confused about my statement. It says life is a country of goodness and intelligence is in passion.
Is in passion.
Yeah.
You're confused about why the mind is in goodness and then... Okay. Technically what it is from the mode means... The false ego, you have the three elements, right? So everything has to come out of the modes. So then, from the mode of goodness, the mind is manifest. From the mode of passion, the intelligence, and from the mode of ignorance, the false ego, right? And then from the five gross elements, then those also are controlled by the modes, like that. Like I think ether will be goodness, air will be, you know, some passion in it, like this, and then earth will be in ignorance, like that. So everything has, so then all the senses then also have that combination of the modes. So the reason is because the intelligence just accepts and rejects, and it experiences. So experience is what's happening now. So even if you're lamenting about something in the past, your experience is your lamentation at present. So the mind is always technically in the present, though it thinks itself in the past or future. So if one just understands one's in the present only, then one functions there. Right? Then that's the mode of goodness. So that's the advantage, because otherwise you waste your time because you're in the past or future.
Lamenting and desiring.
Yeah, lamenting and desiring.
Lamenting
right?
And
desiring. So then the intelligence is connected from, also coming from the mode of passion, is the senses. So the senses are active, so they're gaining, so that's passion. Right? And the intelligence is then breaking that apart, putting it together, so it's active, it's creating. So that's passion, because it's doing it for a result. But now, that's why consciousness is important. Because the consciousness should be transcendental. Even though the activity itself may be being controlled by the mode of passion at this point. Does that make sense?
Can there be the thing in mind, how do you function? inhumane way to educate our children more like the mobile world.
That the mind is thinking, feeling, and willing. But you think about it, what are you thinking about? You're thinking about, can you get an experience from it? Right? Willing means, I can see that I can get an experience, I want that experience. Feeling. And willing is, I want to make the, means the endeavor should be made to gain that experience. So it still all comes back to present. But it'll engage the senses and the intelligence to get what it wants. So you can say that the mind, its purposes may be in passion. It may be functioning within that. But its methodology, how it works, you know, just like you have a knife, it cuts. That's ignorance. So you can be using it to cut vegetables for a sabji for Krishna, you know, or you can be using it to, you know, do some other, make other trouble. Right? So you could be using it in any mode. Right? You know, like a doctor is using it to operate, so that's maintenance. So it's a mode of goodness. You're using it to cut sabji, that's transcendental. Right? You know, so like this, you have your what is it's the modes are there, so they're all mixed. That's why the I think it's 13 chapters, the three modes. So then that's to describe how the modes are working and how to analyze how it's functioning, because it's modes within modes within modes. Right? Does that make sense? Because even within that, it's cutting, okay? So I mean, it's cutting, that's its job. So, but you're doing it to maintain the person's life, so that's a mode of goodness, that's your upper level. Then if you look at it, cutting means destruction. So it's cutting what is now the present and destroying that, so it's ignorance. But you're cutting to get at something else, so that's passion. Right? You know, so all they're all there, so it just depends upon which aspect you need them to focus on. Does that make sense? But it's how it functions is according to the mode of goodness. How the mind, intelligence functions according to the mode of passion. How the intelligence is according to the mode of ignorance. That's why you have to take the ego and connect it to Krishna. Then the identity is of Krishna is transcendent. Intelligence connects with Krishna and it's transcendental. And the mind connects with Krishna and it's transcendental. Because even goodness is not good enough. Okay? So we'll end here. Srila Prabhupada ki, Samavita Bhaktivedanta ki, Jayanta Gaur Premanandi. You got a new machine.
Because you
have to have social interaction. So you have to have a particular group of people with a common value in their interact. Yeah, Bhaktivinoda Thakur explains that in Jaya Dharma that because of the geography and therefore the weather, what food is available, you know, this and that, therefore it creates their own religion. So technically it's a religion, a particular, culture is a religion, you know, but it's not necessarily, you know, dealing with, it may or may not include higher elements, but they have a way to form, so then, therefore they value, let's say, in this religion they value family interaction, so therefore that community will always value that and will do that. Anything against that will go against that. And something else, let's say you go up, you know, let's say up north, then the gringo is listening to soul, getting the money and sacrifice your liberation family for that. It's just like you have this story of so is that what's the difference between a Bengali and a Marwari? And they were giving an example. So a Bengali businessman and a Marwari businessman. Then a tender came up in the newspaper, or they were in Calcutta, in Bombay, you know, for something in their business. And so then it had to, the tender had to be given at this particular date. So then, just on the, basically on the day that they were going to fly to Bombay to give their tender for the contract, then both of them, their son falls deathly ill. So they both take their son to the hospital and all that. So the Bengali guy takes his son to the hospital, makes a nice arrangement and all that, and then they say, are you going to Bombay? He says, forget it, my son's sick, I'm staying here. Another tender. And so then he'll sit there until his son is better and all that, and after that, then the next opportunity, then Marwari will go to Calcutta. I mean, we'll go to the hospital, find the best hospital, best doctors, set his son up like that. And then once everything is all right and everything's situated, then both the son and his wife will say, now you go to Bombay.
Thank you. Just to bring him up the responsibility.
Yeah, that. But also, but I'm just saying, it's just because money is their value.
Yes.
Therefore, means you still have to take care of the family, but still that's more. But then for the Bengali, the family is more important than the money. So therefore, you have to take the loss. So that's your difference between, because there's a difference in basically how they function.
Thank you, Marcus. So I don't want to take you. Can go on.
Yeah. That's a nice thing. Thank you. I'm not going to sleep.